Usually when we look at a business ledger, we expect things to be, pretty cut and dry.
Right. Yeah, mostly math.
Yeah, exactly. You've got your income, you've got your expenses, and your margins. And typically, a back office accounting line item is just, it's just a line item.
Oh, absolutely. It sits there quietly on page 4 of your accounting software.
Doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And you barely even think about it.
Right, because we like to think of back office accounting as this entirely separate universe from front-facing client advice.
Yeah.
I mean, a line item on a spreadsheet doesn't typically dictate your moral compass,
Yeah.
and it certainly shouldn't dictate your regulatory risk.
But then, you step into the rapidly shifting landscape of mortgage broking in
Oh,
2026.
yeah. It is a completely different world right now.
It really is. And suddenly, one of the most irritating, mundane little line items in the back office has mutated. I'm actually like a bit anxious even talking about it.
I don't blame you.
Because this one detail has morphed into the most dangerous strategic lever you can pull in your entire business.
It essentially has become the defining compliance tightrope of the year.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you don't fully understand the mechanics of what's happening right now, you are exposing your revenue and your license, really, to massive invisible risks.
Welcome to today's deep dive. If you are joining us, you are likely here because you need to catch up and catch up fast on exactly what is happening in the mortgage broking space right now.
Which is a lot.
So much. We are pulling our insights today from a phenomenal, just really comprehensive piece published in the Broker Times.
Ah, by Jennifer Austin.
Yes, Jennifer Austin. The article is titled, "No Clawback is a Best Interest Question Now."
It's a great piece.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to explore the sudden wave of no clawback lenders, break down the new 2-year regulatory cap, and most importantly, figure out how you navigate the massive best interest duty compliance trap.
Which is huge.
Right, the trap that these changes are creating for you.
Exactly. Our goal today isn't just to summarize the industry news for you. We really need to understand the underlying mechanics.
Like the why.
Yes, why this shift matters for your business resilience and how you actually operate within this new framework without triggering an audit.
Right.
Because the rules of engagement have fundamentally changed from the ground up.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Okay.
Because the sheer urgency of the situation is, it's wild to me.
It is moving so fast.
We are seeing a massive coordinated shift by lenders to rewrite the rules of broker remuneration. But I feel like to really grasp the compliance danger, we first have to fully understand the market reality that's breeding it.
That's exactly where we need to start. I mean, for years, the concept of a clawback was just an accepted, painful reality.
Just part of doing business as a broker.
Exactly. You write a loan, you do all the heavy lifting, you get paid your upfront commission. But if that client refinances or sells the house within 2 years,
Boom. The lender reaches right back into your bank account and takes the commission back.
right.
And you've already spent that money.
Of course you have.
You've paid your staff, you've paid your aggregator, your taxes, and suddenly the lender is clawing it back.
It's brutal.
But look at the facts Jennifer Austin laid out in this piece. The old playbook is being torn up as we speak, like Ordee Financial. They now have a zero clawback policy across their entire product range.
Yeah, that was a huge move.
And the Trope Financial, same thing, zero clawback.
It's a fundamental restructuring of the risk, really.
And it's spreading into incredibly complex lending tiers, too. I mean, MA Money is heavily leaning into this. They're expanding no clawbacks into commercial lending, self-managed super funds, and get this, residential bridging.
Which is amazing because when you think about it, bridging loans are inherently short term.
Exactly. To offer zero clawback there is huge.
It really is.
And Mortgage Easy has removed clawbacks from a massive swath of its products. So this isn't just a niche, quirky offering anymore. It's becoming a market standard.
Well, what's fascinating here is the underlying channel acquisition strategy driving this movement.
Right, like why are they doing it?
Exactly. Why are these non-banks and specialist lenders suddenly taking on all this risk? They've realized a very simple behavioral truth. If you want a broker's business, don't punish them for things outside their control.
Oh, absolutely. If my client gets divorced 10 months after taking out the loan, or I don't know, they get transferred overseas for work and have to sell the house?
You have zero control over that.
None. But under the old rules, I'm the one who loses my paycheck.
Precisely. And for years, brokers bore the financial brunt of those uncontrollable life events. The non-bank sector recognized that pain point.
And capitalized on it.
Yeah, they realized that offering a zero clawback environment is the ultimate competitive advantage. It's a really aggressive market share play.
For sure.
And once a few highly credible lenders adopt this model, they create a sort of gravity well. The rest of the market faces immense pressure to follow suit, or they risk just watching their broker volume evaporate.
Okay, so the competitive market is swinging towards zero clawback. But at the exact same time, the regulators are stepping in to put hard limits on the lenders who are still holding on to the old ways.
Yes, that's the other side of the coin.
We now have a strict regulatory cap on clawbacks across the board.
Yeah, the new regulatory backdrop is highly specific. Clawback arrangements are now legally prohibited from extending beyond 2 years from the start of the credit contract.
And the article is super precise on the rules here, because if it's a refinance, which, let's face it, is a huge chunk of the market right now.
Massive chunk.
That 2-year clock doesn't start the day you submit the application. It starts ticking the day after the refinance credit becomes available to the borrower.
That's a crucial distinction.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a tightly defined, universally predictable window of liability.
Right.
So even at the major tier one banks that are stubbornly holding onto their clawback policies, there's a hard, legally mandated ceiling.
So how fast does this risk actually decay? Like, am I on the hook for the full 100% for that entire 2-year window, or does it taper off?
Oh, it papers. It's a step-down schedule.
Okay, walk me through that.
So if a client discharges their loan within the first 0 to 12 months, you are looking at roughly a 100% clawback of your upfront commission.
Ouch. Okay.
Yeah. But from 12 to 18 months, that penalty steps down to about 50%.
Right.
From 18 to 24 months, it drops again to roughly 25%. And beyond 24 months, nil.
It's totally gone. You know, when I try to visualize this, it's not like a bomb going off.
Yeah.
It feels more like an evaporating liability or maybe a sand glass.
I like that.
Right? At day one, all the sand, like, your entire upfront commission is sitting in the top half of the glass, totally at risk of falling out.
Yeah.
But as the months pass, the sand slowly trickles down into your quote-unquote safe ledger. Mm-hmm. And by month 25, all the sand is in the bottom. Your money is finally yours.
That is an excellent way to conceptualize it. It's a decaying asset risk.
Yeah.
And if you are operating in a market where refinancing has surged, and a meaningful share of your clients are inevitably going to move their loans within that 24-month window.
Which they will.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This schedule isn't just trivia. It shapes your entire yearly cash flow. I mean, it basically dictates whether your business actually turns a profit this year.
Which completely explains why brokers are flooding toward these no-clawback lenders. I mean, if I have the choice between a sand class that might shatter and one that's safely locked away from day one, obviously I want the safe one.
Of course.
But this exact realization, this total financial relief, is what creates the trap, isn't it?
It is the exact pivot point where a brilliant business strategy instantly becomes a massive regulatory liability.
Let's look at the conflict priority rule, because the temptation here is glaringly obvious.
Very obvious.
Imagine I have a client sitting across from my desk. Lender A offers a great loan product, but exposes my income to a 100% clawback risk for 2 years. But lender B offers a near identical loan product, but has zero clawback. My paycheck is perfectly safe from the moment it settles. Naturally, my brain is screaming, send them to lender B.
Of course it is. It's basic economic self-preservation. But this brings us to the golden rule articulated in the Broker Times piece. And this is the absolute core of the issue.
What's that?
Clawback affects the broker. It does not affect the borrower.
Okay, let's break that down. My risk profile changes entirely between lender A and lender B. But what changes for the client?
Absolutely nothing.
Really?
Nothing. Whether you get hit with a 100% clawback or zero clawback, the client's interest rate is exactly the same. Their monthly repayments are the same.
Right.
The lender fees are the same. The loan features, the offset accounts, the digital app, they are identical. The client's financial reality is completely unaltered by your remuneration risk.
So the client is functionally blind to the clawback risk. It's purely happening on the back end.
Which is why the best interest duty, or BID, becomes the governing law here.
Right.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, under the conflict priority rule, when a broker's interests and a client's interests diverge, meaning what is best for your wallet is different from what is best for their financial outcome, the law mandates that the client's interests must be prioritized.
Without exception.
Without exception.
Here's where it gets really interesting. And I have to push back a bit here because I know what every broker listening is thinking right now.
Go for it.
Let's invent a hypothetical client. Let's call her Sarah.
Okay, Sarah.
Sarah is a graphic designer looking to refinance. Both lender A and lender B offer Sarah the exact same interest rate, the exact same annual fees, the exact same turnaround time.
A dead heat.
Exactly. If it is a dead heat for Sarah, is it really a crime to pick lender B just because it protects my business? I mean, if Sarah isn't being harmed at all, why can't I use my own paycheck as the tiebreaker?
It's the most common rationalization in the industry.
Yeah. And
honestly, it sounds perfectly logical.
No.
But from a compliance perspective, it is unforgiving. You absolutely can recommend the no clawback lender to Sarah. But, and this is a massive but, that recommendation must stand purely on Sarah's merits.
Meaning I have to prove lender B is actually better for Sarah, not just equal to lender A.
Yes. In your file notes, you must document that lender B offers a better product fit or maybe a superior loan structure for her specific tax situation.
Okay, I see.
Or marginally better cost over the life of the loan. Or a specific credit policy that favors her income type. Your reasoning must be entirely centered on the client's benefit.
So no mention of the clawback?
Never. If an ASIC auditor pulls Sarah's file, and the only truly honest underlying explanation for why you chose lender B or lender A is it protected my upfront commission,
yeah,
you have committed a direct BID violation.
Oh, wow.
Remuneration risk must never appear in a suitability note. It cannot drive a file decision.
That is a razor-thin line to walk. You are essentially asking human beings to ignore their own survival instincts when writing a file note.
Pretty much.
But it makes me wonder about the actual enforcement. Like, moving from Sarah's individual file to the macro view, how does a regulator actually catch a broker doing this?
That's the big question.
Because let's say I write a really solid, plausible paragraph justifying lender B for Sarah. I hit save. I assume I've dodged the bullet. How would anyone know my real motivation was the zero clawback?
That assumption is probably the most dangerous misunderstanding of modern compliance.
Really?
Yeah. Brokers frequently operate under the illusion that compliance is checked sequentially, entirely on a file-by-file basis. They think if the grammar is good and the justification sounds plausible on page one of a single file, they are safe.
Right. I mean, they can't read every single file, right?
They aren't just reading paragraphs.
Yeah.
ASIC and the compliance teams at your aggregators are employing sophisticated data analytics.
Oh, okay.
They aren't starting with Sarah's file note. They're looking at systemic patterns across your entire business. They are hunting for what's called a book level tilt.
A book level tilt. Okay, walk me through the mechanics of that. What does that actually look like on an aggregator's compliance dashboard?
Think of it as standard deviation from the mean, you know? The algorithm pulls your entire CRM data, every settlement you've made over a quarter.
Okay.
And it establishes a baseline. It knows what the average broker in your network is recommending.
Right.
So if the industry average shows that brokers send roughly 15% of their total volume to specialist zero clawback lenders.
Yeah.
But your specific dashboard shows that 85% of your recommendations cluster around those exact same four lenders.
Oh, wow.
The system immediately flags you as a high-risk outlier.
Because mathematically, it's virtually impossible that those four specific lenders just happen to be the absolute best fit for 85% of my incredibly diverse client base.
Exactly. Without a wildly compelling, genuinely unique client base explanation like, for example, maybe you exclusively specialize in complex commercial bridging loans.
Right, something super specific.
Exactly. Without that, the pattern itself becomes the evidence of a BID violation. The algorithm reveals that your remuneration risk, rather than your client's varying circumstances, is quietly steering the spread of your advice. The data tells the truth, even if the individual file notes look clean.
That is genuinely terrifying, because a broker might not even realize they're doing it.
Exactly.
It might just be this creeping subconscious bias toward the safer option over the course of 6 months. Which is exactly why Jennifer Austin's article highlights what she calls the absolute cheapest compliance habit available.
The quarterly self-review.
Yes, the quarterly self-review.
It is an essential survival mechanism. You must step back every single quarter and act as your own auditor.
Mm-hmm.
Read your own settlement mix. Do the data analytics on yourself before the aggregator's algorithm catches it.
Be proactive.
Exactly. If you see your placements skewing heavily, you have to ask yourself the hard questions. Do I have a defensible, diverse client merit story that explains this concentration? or am I steering?
The article actually mentions a specific tool for this, the clawback exposure estimator.
Oh, yeah, that's a powerful tool.
It gives an example of a loan with a 0.65% upfront commission. You plug in the loan amount, and it spits out exactly how much cash you stand to lose at the 12, 18, and 24-month marks if that specific client refinances.
Right.
And let me tell you, staring at that exact dollar amount is sobering. It really triggers that loss aversion.
It definitely does.
But the source material gives a massive warning here, and I want to pass it directly to you, the listener. These exposure estimator tools are exclusively for cash flow planning. They are not tools for steering files.
That distinction is paramount.
Yeah.
You use that estimator to model your trail book's exposure, so the risk is mathematically quantified for your own budgeting.
Right, it's for you.
You do not use that terrifying dollar figure to justify routing the next applicant to a safer, no clawback lender.
So we've stared the compliance risk right in the face. We know the algorithms are watching the book-level pilts.
Right.
But I want to pivot to how we actually survive this.
Let's do it.
Because no one listening wants to lose their income. And absolutely no one wants an ASIC audit. How do you protect your hard-earned revenue without violating the best interests duty?
The author provides a brilliant mental framework for this. It's about separating your daily operations into two distinct, hermetically sealed containers.
The two boxes concept.
Yes.
Let's build this out because this is the actionable takeaway here. Box number one is the business decision box. This is where you put your CEO hat on, and this is where a clawback belongs, entirely and completely.
Correct. When you are operating in box one, you are looking at your business strategy. You look at the broader market and you decide your panel accreditations.
Right.
You might say, I am going to intentionally get accredited with ORDE, La Trobe, and MA Money, because their zero clawback policies will mathematically strengthen my business.
Totally fair game.
Exactly. You do your cash flow modeling here. You decide how much of your monthly budget you are going to invest in client retention software. All of that is fair game. Clawback is a vital, healthy metric to track in this box.
Then you have box number two. This is the file decision box. You take the CEO hat off and you put your advisor hat on.
And clawback never, ever goes in this box.
Never. Box two is exclusively about answering one single question. Why did this specific client get placed with this specific lender today?
And in box two, the only metrics that exist are the client's rate, the client's fees, the required loan structure, and their turnaround time needs.
Right.
Your panel is already set up to benefit you. Your job in this box is purely to serve the client from the options available.
That makes a lot of sense.
But this raises an important question, though.
What's that?
If a broker is keeping clawback entirely out of their file recommendations, and they're consistently putting clients into full clawback loans because it's legitimately the best product for them, how do they actually reduce their clawback exposure?
Oh, right.
Are they just a sitting duck for 24 months while that sandglass drains?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. And the answer is actually incredibly empowering. You don't reduce your clawback exposure by steering the client at the front end. You reduce it through retention at the back end.
Exactly. You fight the clawback clock with service, not with compliance breaches.
Let's run through this defensive lever timeline because this is the actual playbook here. Remember that sandglass we talked about earlier?
Yep.
Here's how you ensure nobody tips it over. During months 0 to 12, where your financial risk is roughly 100%, you combat that risk with flawless onboarding. You implement early value touch points. You don't just secure the loan and disappear. You make sure the client is absolutely thrilled with the settlement process and understands their new digital banking features perfectly.
And as you move into months 12 to 18, where your risk steps down to 50%, you launch your next proactive defense, which is the first annual review.
Yes, so important.
You do not wait for the client to see a shiny new rate on a billboard and call you. You reach out first. You conduct a rate health check. You prove to them that you are actively monitoring their financial well-being even after you've been paid.
And then you enter that final danger zone, months 18 to 24. You still have 25% of your commission at risk. And this is typically when the introductory honeymoon rates start expiring, you know, looking less competitive.
Exactly.
This is when you go on the offensive. You provide proactive retention offers. You call their current lender and negotiate repricing on the client's behalf before the client even realizes they could get a better deal elsewhere.
Which is huge for the client.
It's massive. You completely eliminate their motivation to shop around.
And if you execute that timeline correctly, you cross the 24-month threshold, the regulatory cap kicks in, the clawback risk drops to absolute zero.
It's a beautiful thing.
And you haven't just saved your upfront commission. You now have a fiercely loyal client who is primed for relationship, repeat, and referral business.
It's a total reframe of the problem, really.
It is. We need to shift how the entire industry views this dynamic. A no clawback panel is a wonderful gift to your business resilience. It gives you a wider margin of error. But it is not a shortcut for your advice process.
No.
The most reliable, unshakable, fully compliant defense against a clawback isn't a clever file note. It's simply a client who is so well-serviced that they never want to leave you.
So what does this all mean? If you're driving to your next client meeting or reviewing a file right now, what is the core takeaway?
Well, the zero clawback wave from specialist lenders and non-banks is very real. And it is a fantastic cash flow boost in a high refinance market.
Absolutely.
But you must manage it purely at the macro business level. Keep your remuneration risk entirely out of your file notes. Use the two boxes to separate your CEO decisions from your advisor decisions.
Right.
Let a structured, highly proactive retention program do the heavy lifting to protect your income over that two-year clock and prioritize the client's merits every single time you hit submit. That is the definitive roadmap for navigating 2026. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final, slightly provocative thought to mull over.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire time discussing clawbacks as a closed-loop arrangement. It's a secret ledger between the broker and the lender, heavily guarded by aggregator compliance teams.
Right.
But what happens as general consumer awareness begins to grow?
Oh, that's a fascinating angle.
Imagine a near future where highly educated borrowers, armed with sophisticated consumer AI and financial literacy tools, sit down at your desk and start demanding to know your specific clawback exposure before they will accept your advice.
Wow.
What if they ask, excuse me, does this bank take your commission back if I leave next year? And is that why you're recommending them?
That would be intense.
How would that level of radical transparency change the trust dynamic in your client meetings? I mean, if the hidden ledger suddenly became public knowledge tomorrow, would your current advice process survive the scrutiny?
That is a brilliant question to end on, because eventually all back office secrets find their way to the front desk. And when that day comes, you want your file notes and your conscience to be bulletproof. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the shifting architecture of mortgage broking. We hope this gives you the absolute clarity you need to navigate the best interest duty in the year ahead. Keep learning, keep questioning your own systems, and stay curious. We will catch you on the next deep dive.